Heather, that was well done. All my life, truly almost from the time I emerged from my mother's womb, I've been involved in the conservative movement. I was born in 1949. My dad ran for Congress in 1948 and 1950 in a Democratic district. I remember walking precincts with my dad, learning that politics was oftentimes about helping people, not really about ideas in certain ways, although ideas were at the root of it. I remember when my friend Harry Verreiser was practicing his teaching, and we had a small class on Ludwig von Mises in the basement of Ted Jaworski's house when I guess I was 15. But all my life, in different ways, I've had the great honor of meeting and in some cases being friends with, if you will, the giants in the conservative movement. Bill Buckley asked me to be on a couple of his firing line shows as a student questioner. I got to not only know Russell Kirk, but went canoeing with Russell, and he gave me great advice when I was taking my daughters to England. He gave me the little itinerary. I remember having the great pleasure of getting to know Ed Fulner before there was a Heritage Foundation, when Ed was working for Phil Crane, and what an inspiring conversation that was for me at that time in my life, Ed. But the thing that I've always wrestled with is, you know, when Richard Weaver would say ideas have consequences, and he was right, I think we have won the idea war. We have won the idea war. Where I believe we have failed is in the word made flesh. That people have not experienced, not those who are like us, but those who are different than us, have not experienced the richness and the love of the fullness of what those ideas mean in our daily life and work. Let me just give you three quick statistics involving Detroit. I sit on the board of something called Excellent Schools Detroit, and we sent a whole team of people to visit every school in the city, Catholic, Independent, Charter, Detroit Public Schools, the EAA, and whatever. In kindergarten through the eighth grade, last year, there were 80,313 children. Of those 80,313 children, 67,341 of them were in failing schools. A failing school we defined as less than 10% can do math at grade level, less than 30% can read at grade level. Now that's an appalling tragedy. And yet you say to yourself, I was with some ministers from some of the churches, and I asked them, I sort of took Heather's thing, what if the whole system collapsed and these schools that are not allowing your children to be all that God would intend, if they were there no more, what would the alternative look like? And these are friends of mine, and a good friend will speak candidly to you. And all three ministers, all good men, said, I don't know what we would do, but I really don't think the rest of the world would help us very much. And Clark, I don't think your people would help us very much. Now you think about that. And it was said not in anger, it wasn't said in any negative way, it was almost said with a disappointment and a sadness. Now you think that when God created all of us, he created us in fact, his prayer just before he crossed over to the Kidron Valley to Gethsemane was that we would all be one. And yet the deepest divide, in a curious way, is not the ideas. It's the lack of relationship in creating those little platoons that Burke spoke of that bring vitality to a free and prosperous society. If you think about it, you know, when Maura was talking about the number of children, when Heather touched on the number of children who don't have fathers in the household, and the number in Detroit is 79% of the children born in the city are born to single mothers. You know what the flip side of that statistic is? 79% of the children born in Detroit are born to irresponsible fathers. And in a curious way, when we started Cornerstone 23 years ago, I have to tell you how it came about. I want to talk about this in a personal way, because I think that in some way or other, it's the only way we can start in, within the conservative movement, to take our conversation and our the reality to a different place, and an understanding of the reality to a different place. I've loved politics. I think the, you know, some of my best friends are politicians. But I admired Ronald Reagan. My dad and mother were, my dad was a Goldwater delegate. You know, we were for Reagan in 76, and, you know, it was, all of that was so wonderful. But I think that if we are, so I was running for public office, and I was in the editorial page offices of the Detroit News. Tom Bray was the editor at the time, and we were talking, and he at the end of the interview, he said, "Hey, Clark, did you hear the talk that the new archbishop in town gave to the Economic Club?" And I said, "Well, frankly, Tom, I was out campaigning. I didn't, his name was Adam Mida, and I, no, I wasn't there." And he said, "Some of the things that you're talking about were things that he talked about in his remarks." So at that time, I was a good Presbyterian boy, and I didn't know where the archdiocesan offices were, but I went and found them. And I was sitting in a vest in the vestibule on the seventh floor, and I was flipping through his talk. He did something that day that is rare for the Economic Club. He began by quoting scripture from the 22nd chapter of the book of Revelation, the first six verses, which talk about making all things new again and God coming down out of heaven to be with his people so that there'd be no more tears, no more mourning, and all things would be made new again. And ultimately, you know, that is the conservative vision. And so in that talk, about the 10th page of it, was a simple paragraph and two lines. And he talked about wanting to create a new kind of a school. Now, the humility of that is really awesome, because here was a man who had a school system at that time with almost 20,000 children in it, and he was talking about creating something new. And all I can tell you is that I read those lines, my heart leapt. You know, I was a tough trial lawyer and doing a variety of other things, but my heart leapt. And I knew that for some reason or other, I was born to go and help him do this. So I went to see him. I had come back from Los Angeles on the red eye. I went home, showered up, and went back downtown for breakfast. And he laughs to this day, because I told him that God had put it on my heart to come and help him create whatever this was to be. And a long story short, we began to meet. He had a small group of people, and then there was a larger group, and we met over at the seminary, and a professional educator was up front and giving this presentation about opening up a school. And there was a man sitting next to me who raised his hand, and he said, "Well, Dr. Henry, how long will it be before those schools open?" And she said, "Well, you know, we have curriculum plans. We have to hire people. We have to find the facility. We've got to, you know, figure out how to pay for them. It will probably be 3 years." And this man sitting next to me has banged his fist on the table, and he said, three years, why, these children are dying now. We've got a ready fire, and then we'll aim." And I pushed him on the shoulder, and I said, "Father Cunningham, I'm with you. We must do it now." And that was in February of 1991. In April, we met, our little group of 14 met for every other week. We came up with a single sheet of paper that had a vision, philosophy, and mission statement in late April. In May, the Archbishop asked if I would be the founding chairman of the schools. In May, we held a press conference, and in August, we had two schools open, and we took 167 children, and we've never looked back. But the interesting part of this story, first of all, just on the quick statistics, 95% of our kids through all these 23 years, 95% of our kids have graduated from high school. 91% of them have either gone on to college, some of the military, or some other form of learning. And it's been a wonderful story. But in October, and this goes to something that Rich brought up, and I want to share this with you. In October of that year of 1991, we were trying to figure out, I was chairman, but I was sort of like the executive chairman. We were trying to figure out, how do you sustain this thing? Because we weren't going to take any government money. And four families, we met at the Pancake House on Mack Avenue, and one by one, these four families said that they would cover the deficit for at least 3 years. So we did charge a little bit of tuition. Nobody could pay what it was, you know, what it cost us, but everybody had to have skin in the game. And then a friend of mine said to me, Clark, what is the core principle or the core attribute? Now, I want you to understand this in a very different way, but I have to tell you how this conversation went. It was in a hotel in Arlington, Virginia, on a Saturday afternoon in the middle of October. And he said to me, what is the singular attribute? And I'm not a particularly religious person, so I have to just sort of lay this out here in the way in which it came to me. What is the singular attribute that reflects Jesus' relationship with any person? Now, as a lawyer, I started giving him all sorts of lawyerly answers. I mean, he was a very kind man, and he said, well, that's thoughtful. But at the end, he said, Clark, that's really nice, but it really is love. And what is that love? It's a giving of oneself to allow another to have a more abundant life. And he said, if you go back to Detroit and create relationships around the children that reflect that idea, I don't know what will come from it, but it will be good because it's rooted in the very principle around which the whole universe has been created. It was an Emmaus Road experience for me. It was before National Airport was Reagan National. I got up. We didn't even finish the meal. I gave him a big hug. I said, that is brilliant. And he said, by the way, you can charge for the privilege. So I got on the plane. I went back to tell my business partner when I landed at Metro. I called him up. I said, Mike, I got to come talk to you. And I went over to his house, and he's Clark, we're going out. I said, Mike, I've got the idea. This is going to work. This is going to allow us to sustain these schools. And he said, what is it? And I said, well, no, I have to ask you a question. What is the singular attribute? And he's a very impatient business guy. He said, I don't have time for that. And I said, oh, well, it's love, Mike. And, you know, you have to give of yourself to allow another to have a more abundant life. And I said, we're going to create relationships around the children that reflect that. And we're going to ask everybody to contribute $2,000. And Mike said to me, you will not find 50 people to go into a city they're afraid of, to give time they don't have, to be with children they don't know, and to pay for the privilege. I said, Mike, you're my friend, you're my my law partner, but I think you're wrong. I went and got a friend named Annie Dickerson. We went and took pictures of all the kids. I got the managing partner at Deloitte. I got a guy who was Roger Penske's partner and got the bank president. We went around and talked to some people. It took us only 3 months, and all 167 children had a partner. That little platoon and community over 23 years, in ideas, in money, it's generated more than $100 million. Because we have 5 locations in different campuses and whatever. We have 2,400 students. But over the years, that simple idea that is rooted at the core of the conservative idea bore that fruit. And here is my challenge to all of us, myself included, and all of us. I don't think any of this stuff is going to change until we ourselves change the way we approach it. That we have to be willing to go into Samaria. We have to go and create relationships with people who are not like us, but people who in the most deepest sense truly are our brothers and our sisters. And to create those relationships that reflect this very core of the universe. And I believe that when you think of all these children, these 67,000 children, if just 5,000 of them could be able to have friends that would help them, talk to them about what it means. One of the great joys I have is sitting with the eighth graders, both the young men and the young women, and I talk to the young men about what it, and I, not just once, but what it means to be a father, what it means to be a husband, and what it means to be a man. I talk even to the young ladies because I have the example of both my mother and my wife, and I talk to them about what it means to truly be a young woman. And those are the core things. But if all of a sudden these children were able to walk into the arms of strangers who will become friends, this system that is destroying our country, by the way, will collapse. John Engler told me when I was president of the state school board and we were drafting the first charter school bill, and Richard McClellan was a critical component of that, in fact, was the main drafter, and John had asked me to run to be president of the state board, run for the state board, and then to become president so we could start these charter schools. And John said, you know, if we can get these started and just start giving these families a choice, it'll take it away from these systems that are destroying their spirits and not preparing them to be the kind of young men and young women that they ought to be in a free society. And John was right about that. Over half the children now in Detroit go to a charter school. The challenge is to get those to be quality, but the idea ultimately of allowing these children to leave these failing institutions because they experience a new institution of love, I'm telling you, the whole world will know about it, because Detroit is exactly what Heather said. It is a platform and a city that everybody is looking at. So I would invite all of you in different ways, come to Detroit. Come just for a day. Come and meet some of these children. Come and meet some of these families. And give them something more important than your title. Give them something more important than your money. Give them you. Let them know you. And if we do that, the world will change in the way that all of us have lived our lives and have thought about and written about and spoken about, but in a way in which the word will be made flesh, because it'll be through each and every one of us. God bless you all, and thanks very much.